Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Second and 10, Ohio State from the Oregon 45. Howard will toss that one short out to the left side. Jeremiah Smith to the Oregon 35-yard line. To the 30, by defenders to the 20. And he's going to take it to the end zone for a touchdown. Jeremiah Smith, 45 yards to the end zone. Going down the left side of the field, and much like the previous game against Tennessee, a quick start for Ohio State, and the Buckeyes lead Oregon 6-0.
And it would only get worse from there if you're an Oregon fan. For Ohio State, it was awesome. That was Paul Keels from Learfield. We're back. Maggie and Perloff, so glad to have you, and happy 2025. We're going to kind of work backwards on this. From the game we most recently saw, Perloff, that was the Rose Bowl, another Oregon thumping. It was Tennessee in the first round. Now Oregon, they take out the number one seed. They look like far and away the best team in this tournament. I know we have not seen Georgia yet for tragic reasons, but Ohio State looks like this is their tournament to lose now.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying, but it's obviously week to week, like in game to game. Oregon, is it just the rest? I mean, or the 2 weeks off?
Why they didn't? Basically no showed in the first half.
I'm just saying. Sorry, New Year. I immediately lose my voice. was up late watching tape. No, I mean it's just. I feel like it's a week to week proposition. Like that was not the real Oregon team last night. If Ohio State and Oregon line up 10 times, Ohio State's not going to beat them like that. I just think that there's a randomness to this kind of playoff thing. Like, I don't think that score was indicative of where both teams are. It just was, as Oregon said after the game, this was not our game. They clearly came out totally flat. Ohio State was working Jeremiah Smith.
Yep.
They didn't have an answer. So I do think, like, yes.
Are you really sick the first day of the year? It's funny because I'm like, man, 2025, what's it going to hold? This is going to be even bigger and better than 2024. And all of a sudden, you can't talk.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense that, like, this, just because Ohio State did this to Oregon does not always translate to the next round? This is the first time we've had a 12-team playoff, but we don't know what it's going to look like from week to week. Like, do you really think Ohio State's that much a better team than Oregon?
Yesterday, they definitely were. And I think the fact that Ohio State also destroyed Tennessee in the way that they did, I think now we've got enough of a sample size
here.
I do. And, you know, I think for Ohio State, we asked this question kind of all year long.
Yeah.
How aren't they more dominant? Why aren't they more dominant? It was the play calling. How do they lose to Michigan? I know you were over Chip Kelly. How do you not get the ball to Jeremiah Smith more against that Michigan in that Michigan loss, which was unforgivable? But I saw this a lot yesterday, and I'll echo the sentiment. I do think that Michigan loss was probably, I would say, the best thing for him. But, man, if that wasn't a wake-up call. Because the calls about Ryan Day's future were valid. The frustration from the fan base was valid, and the question marks around why this collection of talent could not put it together against their biggest rival, those were all valid. And it was either going to go one or two ways. Either they're going to whimper out in the playoff and Ryan Day was maybe going to get fired, maybe leave, who knows, or the opposite was going to happen. And that's what we're looking at now, this sort of like revenge aspect. And I thought you watched last night in the Rose Bowl or yesterday afternoon. You saw a team that lost a close game on the road where their quarterback had a brain fart. The team had a brain fart, and he got a second chance, and they didn't look back. And if you're an Oregon fan, and I know we've got a lot of Oregon fans in our audience, you've got to be sick. First of all, the fact that you were the number one seed and you had to play Ohio State in the first round, which I railed against. But you know what? That's all in the past. You no-showed. And you know what? Oregon kind of had this reputation, Pearl, I think before this year, of sometimes not being able to rise in the big games. And you thought that was in the past. And Dan Lanning was a big game coach. And then yesterday, just absolutely nothing.
I hear what you're saying. But one thing about, you said he had a brain fart on a second chance. So like last night, I was confused about what Will Howard game they were talking about. So you're talking about the first Oregon game.
Yes.
So he had a second chance. Then he was horrible against Michigan. So it's not like he didn't look back.
Well,
he screwed up again. And that's the other thing. And my point is, if you get any pressure on Will Howard, which could happen in the next round, but you're going against an NFL defensive line, then I don't think it looks like it did yesterday. I don't think Oregon got to Will Howard and made life was easy. When he can step back the Ohio State quarterback and has time and has those receivers, yes, he's going to dominate. There's no doubt about it. But if you're Michigan, who, as we know, if you saw the Alabama game,
yep,
even their backups are ridiculous.
Michigan's defense is so good.
Right. If the defensive line comes up the middle of Will Howard, then it's going to look like Michigan again. Right. So I think last night was a celebration of Ohio State. I don't think it's going to keep looking like that. I don't know why Oregon couldn't get any pressure. They just did not look like the right matchup last night. And it didn't feel, the game was such a blowout. It didn't even feel like a big game letdown by Oregon because they were never even in the game. It was like they barely even showed up to the game.
Which is bananas. And it's funny because we're coming off of the Texas-Arizona State game, which might be one of the great college football games of all time. I don't think that's prisoner of the moment. That was really...
Oh. What? One of the great college football games of all time?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My God. Because...
The stakes, how crazy that game was.
The stakes is a 12-team playoff. Like, this is as little as stakes.
It's win or go home.
Win or go home, yeah. But, I mean, like, it's not like...
It's single elimination.
Yes, I understand the state, but it's not like a national title game. Like, this is the first 12-team playoff. That was an all-time great, like, Cam Scataboo underthrew a running back option by 10 yards, and the guy came back to the ball. Like, that was kind of... A great game.
Wait a minute.
That was kind of like a hot garbage game. That was a mess.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Now we just got to tear up the rundown.
You thought that was like an all-time great game?
Wait, you're welcome to call about Oregon, 855-212-4227. And we can post mortem on the Ducks. But hold on one moment. You think Cam Scataboo, who on fourth down, after puking his brains out and almost having to leave the game, on fourth down, throwing a 42-yard touchdown pass to bring the game to within one score, you thought that was what? Like a handoff?
Well, I mean,
that
was
one of the most exciting moments of the season.
But it was obviously a very poorly played game. I mean, the dude can't hit a field goal to save his life.
Then that made it even crazier.
The guy, first of all, Texas, I don't even know how. Just start with the missed block punt. Like, how on earth did he miss that block punt in the beginning that gave... Texas should have won that game 49-10.
They had to do a fake punt to get themselves back in the game. That's when you knew this thing. It's like, all right, this thing's about to go off the rails.
It was a very close game, but like an all-time great game. Like, it wasn't like Vince Young going against USC. It was more like a Texas team who's about to lose going against an Arizona State team that... may or may not have deserved to be there. This was not an all-time great game, especially if Texas loses the next round. You think we're going to look back at this game as like, wow, that was an all-time great college football game?
Wait, Quinn Ewers, 4th-and-13, will now be shorthand. Like, we'll all know what you're talking about if you just say Quinn Ewers, 4th-and-13, to keep the season alive in overtime. They're down, and he completes an unreal touchdown pass on 4th-and-13 after they just got called for a false start. That was crazy.
You don't think you think people are walking away saying that was a nice performance by Quinn Ewers? Everyone's like, whoa, what happened to Quinn Ewers yesterday?
I said epic game. Epic game. All time.
But doesn't it have to be like a good game to be epic?
It was a good game.
Wait, let me ask you this. Was it a well-played game?
It had everything. It's college football.
Are you running for office? I asked a yes-no question. You came up with, was it a well-played game?
It had its moments. Yes, Cam Scataboo, if they had a most...
Is that what 2025 is going to be? Like, I will ask each other yes-no questions and you'll completely go on the third answer?
No, because it's unfair because sometimes in football and sports, the imperfections make it the most fun. Like, if Bert Auburn just hits the 48-yarder or whatever it was and they end up winning, it's not as epic. The fact that he did miss it, then he... doinked another 34-yarder. Then they go to overtime. Mm-hmm. Then you're backed up. Like, it's overcoming the mistakes that in some ways make a game even more epic.
Let me ask you this. If Texas gets blown out by Ohio State, it's a 6-point spread now. Say they lose. Don't you think people are going to look back at that game differently? Like, oh, man, I don't even know if either team really deserved to be in a college football playoff. So that's sort of take on it. I was okay. This is like, first of all, the game was hideous.
That's not the point to me. And actually, I don't think it was hideous because I don't think you would call Cam Scataboo. His performance wasn't hideous.
No, he was great. He was great. But like, Texas, would you stop running the ball and just start throwing it again? Like, because you're just blowing the game.
Well, I actually thought the opposite. I think they started throwing when they should have been running. They got the ball back with about 5 minutes left to go, and they still had... they still had the lead, and for some reason decided to just keep throwing, and Quinn Ewers threw a terrible interception, which set Arizona State up to tie the game.
Well,
if
right,
they just
they
bled
were up,
more clock, they maybe could have, you know, they wouldn't have given Arizona State this gift wrap, this opportunity for them to tie.
But they were up 14-3 or 17-3, and then Sark started in the second quarter. He's like, well, I'm going to try and run this one out. Like, in the it was insane. The Texas scored so easily on the first drive. I'm like, okay, they should win this game 49-7. And then Sark had, I don't know what kind of game plan. Like, and why can't Texas Longhorns?
Yeah.
You have pros all over your offense. Like, why can't you run the ball against Arizona State, who's way smaller than you?
I don't know. It was a weird, weird performance from the Texas offensive line, because we're only going to hear about all these guys when it comes to March and April for the draft. And meanwhile, you have their left tackle, who may go top five, top 10 easily in the draft, got called for a terrible false start that ended up, again, backing them up the 4th and 13, the Quinn Ewers heroics, and Texas wins.
Tons and tons of false starts and illegal
procedures. So many.
So that obviously,
and a targeting call that never got called that should have gotten called against Arizona State.
That is what I'm saying. The mistakes define this game.
But that's a referee mistake. I don't know. So the targeting call was a defenseless receiver. Arizona State's the receiver, defenseless receiver. It was on a third down. And the Texas, you know, safety, I guess, comes over, defenseless receiver, obvious helmet to helmet. I mean, I know this is inconsistent in how we call targeting, and it can be infuriating, but I mean, I don't know what else. Like, you have that little screen, the referee's looking at it with the headphones on. Are you just making a decision at that moment by the referee that I don't want to decide the game like this? Because if you just were calling it by the letter of the rule and the letter of the law, it was targeting.
Yeah, I have no idea why. Everyone knew it. It was targeting. Arizona State probably should have won that game in regulation, assuming that they could have gotten the field goal. I know they have field goal issues.
Major field. They've had three kickers this year, and they got one guy for short attempts and one dude for longer attempts. It's a mess.
So you have, I'd say, two or three defining great plays of this game, right? The Cam Scataboo, what he got?
The pass.
Slingshot in the end zone, the pass, a couple other, the fake punt maybe, and then the Quinn Ewers on 4th and 13. You mentioned all those. But I think the big mistakes, the mistargeting call, the missed field goals, Sark trying to hype up his kicker, and it falling short.
Don't talk to him.
Yes, there are so many little mistakes that are going to define this game. The fact that, I'm telling you, it is such a huge play in the first quarter when Texas has an unblocked rusher on the punter, gets right into the punter, for some reason is afraid of the ball and shies away from it and runs into the punter. And Boise said, like, that was about to, that should have been a blowout. Texas is going to look at that tape and be like, how did this become a game?
Well, now they move on to play Ohio State, so good luck with all that.
Oh, man, a Sark-Ryan Day battle is going to be one for the ages. Oh, my God, who's going to blow this game? I kind of like both coaches, but you have to admit, this is an interesting battle. See, offensive geniuses who you have no idea what's going to happen on game day.
I don't think a game has to be perfectly played for the game to be an all-time great game. I think that's where you and I differ.
How about well played?
Well, but see, here's the thing about a well-played game. There's a place for well-played games. We love a well-played game where, you know, quarterbacks are almost perfect and, you know, big defensive stop, whatever you define a perfect game. This was a fun, epic game because of all the crazy things that happened. Am I crazy here? EJ, back me up.
I don't know what the hell Pearl's talking about this morning. Being completely honest, I don't know what he's talking about with this being, whether it's well played or not. Catholic versus Convicts was not well played. Giants versus Patriots, the first one was not well played. There are a lot of games that weren't well played that we still consider as great games. I think we're kind of being prisoner of the moment to say that it wasn't great because there were mistakes. All the great games we love have mistakes.
Yeah, but so if Texas gets blown out like a, what is this, quarterfinal?
Yeah.
Like, is it going to go down as a great game? Oh, remember that Texas-Arizona State?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everyone in Austin, Texas will forever, if they win a national championship, be like, we almost blew it, and our guy came through on 4th and 13, and then we struck again with a touchdown, and then we got a pick to win the game. Everybody will remember this.
I just said if they get blown out.
If they won.
No. Of course, if they win, it'll be great. But it'll be like Kentucky, UConn. But they're not going to win. Like, that team ain't winning.
But the NCAA tournament, we have plenty of great games where Cinderellas beat people or teams win in the first round. And we don't say, oh, well, that team didn't win the national championship, so that game was bad. We know. We say, oh, that was a great game. Neither team won a title, but it was still a great game.
Yeah, I just think that generally, too, like, and this is my, like, people are going to look back at this 12-team playoff, like, wow, that was a mess. Like, that, I remember people already saying, like, what? Why did we expand for 12 for this garbage? I mean, that's out there. I mean, the favorites just rolled.
Okay, yeah. Here's the thing. I understood that take a little bit more after the first round, where you just got blowouts all over the place. And it's like, oh, dude, what happened? Clearly, they need to figure out the reseeding and the whole conference champions get an automatic bid and all that stuff. You can't say it after yesterday.
What are you talking about? There's been three games and two have been non-competitive.
And one gave us an all-timer.
Right.
And we still have one to play today.
Texas coaching staff went into a coma in the second quarter and made it a game out of nowhere. And I guess it's an all-time game, but still, like, that is, if the referendum on the 12-team playoffs is what happened in that game, then okay, I guess. But like, both those teams have no prayer. Like, Arizona State would lose in the next round, and Texas, unless something changes drastically, they're out.
855-212-4227. All right, got a couple things for you there. Do you consider yesterday an all-time epic college football game? I don't think we're being prisoner of the moment on that one. Perloff's not as impressed.
Like, I mean, think of Vince Young versus USC.
Okay, right? But if that's the only game that you're ever going to play.
No, or think of, like, and you mentioned Catholics versus convicts. Like, that was, like, think of all the great players in that game, though. Like, you're going to look back at this and be like, yeah, Kansas Gadaboo.
That performance was great.
He was unreal.
Yeah, he was better than anybody that played in Catholics versus convicts.
Do you think this is as good as Boise State, Oklahoma?
I mean, I think Boise State, Oklahoma is an all-time great game. I think
that was an epic game. This was like, oh God, what a mess. And it was a lot of fun, but this was not Boise State, Oklahoma to me.
But like, see, in some ways, this is actually bigger because Boise State, Oklahoma, that was the Fiesta Bowl. That was the last game of the season for both of those teams. This one, Texas does have to march on. I think it adds a little bit more to it because there's still unfinished business here.
All right, we'll see. Unfinished business, it'll finish in a week.
I mean, listen, the way Ohio State's playing, I get that. But we still got a lot to do. 855-212-4227. All right. Also, question for you. Have you been super disappointed by the college football playoffs so far? I think that's also something we have to get into. Because, yes, we got a great double overtime, in my opinion, epic game yesterday. But to be fair, to Perloff, a lot of these games have been pretty non-competitive. 855-212-4227. We'll also get into the Sugar Bowl, which will be happening later today in the shadow of tragedy. Maggie and Perloff, let's go.
Maggie, welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. You know, one of my huge pet peeves is television refereeing analysts. Former officials who get on there.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Get on there and agree with everything that happened on the field. A couple reasons. One, I think there's a brotherhood there amongst officials. And also because ESPN is not really, they're not journalists. They're a hype machine for college football, which they own.
Right.
The fact that ESPN was so forceful all night long on the missed targeting call in Arizona State, Texas, like everybody, even the corrupt officiating analysts were like, that was targeting. So 100% of everybody thought it was targeting. I have a question about that game. We're debating whether this was a great game, Arizona State, Texas. If they call targeting and Arizona keeps the ball, do they hit a field goal and win the game? Like, was that the game right there?
It might have been. And it would have made it, I think, like a 4th and 5. At that point, Arizona State wouldn't have made
it. No, they get a first down.
Oh, it would have been first down. Of course, it's targeting. What am I talking about?
Yeah, right around midfield. We could get the yard line, but they were pretty close to field goal range already after that call.
No, but I think that they're probably running a few more plays.
Yeah, no, they got to get down a little further. No, there was time. They had plenty of time. Yeah. There would have been targeting.
I don't think field goal was in the cards yesterday. They were going for the end zone. And by the way, they had all the momentum in the world at that point.
Right. Well, they just gotten stopped on that drive, though. Texas woke up on defense a little bit, played really well.
I know, but
on
the targeting call would have breathed life. It's almost like taking a charge or something.
Absolutely. So I actually think if they'd called targeting, then Arizona State probably would have had the game-winning score at the end of the game and not gone to overtime. So it probably did determine the outcome of the game. Again, we're debating today, is that a great game? Like, again, mistakes define this
game.
Mistakes define this game. And I think we'll have to wait and see how Texas does moving forward.
Man, I can't believe that right now Perloff's winning this poll. This cannot be.
Because you know why?
Of course it was an all-time great game. That's not prisoner of the moment.
EJ worded the poll, was the Texas-Arizona State Peach Bowl matchup an all-time great college football game? The word great kind of implies well played a little bit. I just think you might read that as well played.
Listen, yeah. I think you watched it. If there was such thing as like a MOP, the most like outstanding player of the tournament, so to speak, yeah. I think in one game, Cam Scataboo has to be in the running for that.
He's awesome. But you also look back like, wow, Texas is playing the wrong quarterback. How is that scrub out there when you have Arch Manning on the bench? That's going to come up, and history's going to look back at that and be like, because Ewers did not play well last night.
Okay, but 4th and 13, he won the game for them.
Yeah, I know, but generally, like, were you impressed? And I know he had a big touchdown run. Like, were you impressed by the way he was playing from start to finish?
You know, no, but that 4th and 13 was one of the most unreal plays.
Yeah, it was at all time. You're right.
I mean, I remember back to the Iron Bowl, was it 2 years ago, the Jalen Milroe to Isaiah Bond. Like, I didn't think Milroe had a very up and down season, but that was an all-time play in that moment.
Yeah. So, Isaiah Bond, you might want to play that interception last night, by the way.
I think he's hurt out there.
Yeah. Okay. So the debate, was that a all-time great college football game? I think you'll eventually win this poll because people are stuck in the moment. I just want, in a month, let's talk about this.
Fred is in California, our first caller of Maggie and Perloff in the new year. Fred, let's make it a great one.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate you guys. Maggie, I think your boy just is drinking too much haterade. The sound in his voice, he just wants a reason to hate this game. I mean, I don't like Arizona State. I wasn't a fan of them, but that was a fantastic game. Super great game, entertaining. I mean, I've coached football for 25 years, and that's like a very entertaining game. Top 8 in the history of this, and definitely one of the best games in this tournament so far. Granted, either one of those teams is going to get mollywopped by the Buckeyes next round. But you know what? You play for the day.
Fred, you start off 2025 on a great note. Thank you, Coach. He's right. And here's the thing about football. I think, oblong ball, weird bounces, like the imperfections and overcoming it is part of it. It's never going to be a perfect game, you know?
I know what you mean. But just some parts of this game just really bother me. I think Texas really has got to look in the mirror about this game because they had an opportunity to come out and take a commanding lead. Like, they really, talent-wise, I think it was a scrappy underdog story. You know, if Arizona State had won and completed the Cinderella story, maybe. But just I look at that game, I'm like, God, Texas, what are you doing?
Well, we're noticing a pattern here, and we'll see if this pattern continues this afternoon when the Sugar Bowl does get underway in New Orleans. We'll talk about all that awful tragedy in a little bit. But, you know, you have the common theme so far has been the teams who played in the first round come out looking way more ready to go than the teams who had the longer layoff. And so I think it's a credit more to Arizona State that they were able to stop the bleeding. And it took a little bit because maybe it was a little bit of Texas taking their foot off the gas, but it was also Arizona State pulling out the fake punt, you know, Cam Scataboo overcoming the fact that he's puking his guts out on the sideline, a little boot and rally for the dude. They kept themselves in this game, whereas we saw in the Rose Bowl yesterday, Ohio State comes out hair on fire, and Oregon could never, they couldn't put up any resistance, especially with Jeremiah Smith.
No, I actually do agree with Fred. This has definitely been one of the better games of the tournament. This is one of the great, did he say, this
the
is
only
one of the
good
great,
game of the tournament,
he said,
really?
This is one of the great games of this format. I'm like, yeah. I mean, yes, it's been one of the better 12-team playoff games, but that obviously means nothing.
It was, basically the only good one so far. All right, keep it coming. 855-212-4227. We're back up, by the way, as we say good morning to our Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM Channel 158. We're back up on YouTube.com/InfinitySportsNet if you want to come in and watch the show, twitch.tv /InfinitySportsNetwork and on X at Maggie Gray. Andrew Bogish, and a happy new year to you, sir.
Guys, happy new year. Your headlines are sponsored by PXG for high quality, high performance golf clubs, apparel that delivers style and comfort, premium golf balls, award winning gloves, and more. Make it a PXG holiday for the golfer in your life. Find the PXG store near you at PXG.com. Maggie, being the journalist that I am, I'm waiting on confirmation from Elias whether or not it's a record that Perloff has been wrong just 6 minutes into the new year.
Wait, what did I say?
The game was great. The game was great.
Thank you.
It was a great game. It was ugly. It was annoying at times, but it was a great game.
It was, okay. But it was ugly, and it was definitely annoying.
And it was 24-8
for a while. By the way, I would say the first 83% of that game was not great.
So, like, yes, it was not great.
Until the fourth quarter, like, thank God. Actually, I got a text from a friend, like, man, Arizona State could have made this a good game. This is so disappointing. And then, like, with 5 minutes left, it's tied. I don't remember exactly how much time was left. But I'm like, oh, it did become a great game. But most of the game was kind of, ugh.
Yeah, it was dicey at times, and it was 24-8 in the fourth quarter. We did go to overtime. Arizona State extending the game, then took the lead on Cam Scadaboo's 3-yard TD run, but then that 4th and 13.
Ready to take the snap, has the snap, 4th and 13, Ewers looking, fires, he's got Golden open, he caught it, touchdown Texas, Matthew Golden strikes again, 28 yards on 4th down and 13, and the Longhorns score a touchdown.
That's Craig away from Learfield. Quinn Ewers then threw a TD to Gunnar Helm to start the second OT, and then Sam Levitt picked off near the goal line to give Texas the 39-31 escape. Here's a relieved Steve Sarkisian.
Not our cleanest game of the year. Then that's okay to say that. But the one thing that I know about our group is when our backs are against the wall and when our best is needed, our best shows up time and time again.
Up next is Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl next week. We'll get to the Buckeyes in just a second, but more on this game first. Scadaboo finishing with 143 yards and 2 scores on the ground, 8 catches for 99 yards, a 42-yard TD pass, and apparently unlimited puking on the sideline during the game as well. Then we got Buckeyes freshman receiver Jeremiah Smith, 7 catches, 187, 2 scores as part of that Buckeye route, I should say, 41-21 over Oregon in the Rose Bowl. Ohio State scoring on 6 of its first 7 possessions with 4 touchdowns over 40 yards.
Can I ask a question? Did anybody have the same thought I had? Like, what the heck? Were you watching that game and say, why were they not throwing the ball to this man against Michigan? Like, it's just so glaring to me. Like, that, what was the strategy change? Just throw to Jeremiah Smith every play and you're going to win 38-0 or something.
He was beyond unstoppable. Yeah, it was. But see, here's the thing. I'm like, yeah, what an indictment on the Michigan, you know, that, and why didn't they do this against Michigan? But then here they are. And I feel like they are now, depending on how Georgia plays today and how they look,
yeah,
they're now, like, they look like it's their tournament now.
But if you could make that critical,
what does it matter?
Because if you can make that critical a mistake against Michigan, then your coaching staff is capable of anything. That's why, that's the only reason I would say it matters.
Because that was a big self-scouting. Because that was a close game that they lost in Oregon. It was not close on a neutral field yesterday. And it looks like they've righted the wrong. So don't you have to give the coaching staff
credit? Well, yeah, but again, right. But self-scouting, did they self-scout earlier in the season when their run game completely disappeared? I just think that they're an odd team. I cannot, odd in the sense that they blew the end of the season. Now they're a house on fire. This is all just very weird to me.
There's a part of me that wonders that if, because they have so many weapons and so many guys that have NFL futures, if some of this was them trying to, like, help these other guys get looks and get, you know, tape, so to speak. And maybe because, you know, Jeremiah Smith's going to be there unless he transfers, which is unlikely, the next 2 years. And I kind of wonder, like, now that the games are really, they really matter and they're really do or die, they're like, okay, that guy's the best player. He's going to get the ball every time we got a shot.
Yeah. And dicey strategy, though.
Yeah, I know. But, like, they're so talented. I think they feel like, hey, we could spread the sugar around and beat Nebraska and beat Michigan. But we now know, hey, you throw the ball at Jeremiah Smith, you'll probably win.
I just think the one difference is, and you saw Texas against Arizona State, like, that defensive line – I haven't seen a murder scene like that. They destroyed Arizona State's offensive line. Every single play, Leavitt was getting chased throughout. They had no offense, basically. Can that defensive line get through Ohio State's offensive line? You talked about all season offense. Ohio State's offensive line was up and down because of injuries.
Yeah, they had crazy injuries throughout the season. Yeah. They had to shuffle guys, and it was right before the Indiana game. They lost their center. It was, tough.
So I just think that, yes, they looked great against Oregon last night. Oregon was flat. A lot of football left.
Obviously, the college football focus remains, though, on New Orleans. Notre Dame and Georgia now scheduled for a 4 Eastern kickoff today, but there are some who do think the Sugar Bowl should be pushed until tomorrow still to allow the city to continue dealing with yesterday's terror attack. I was just reading that Notre Dame did let some of its traveling party, band members and whatnot, people wanted to leave. They were allowed to go back home yesterday and not stick around for the game today.
They should extend that to the players, too. If you don't feel comfortable playing in that game, you should not have to. I mean, especially where yesterday the police commissioner came out and said they do not think that this terrorist acted alone and they're still investigating. So I think everyone should have the option.
Well, I think the players, though, would all say, I want to return because of, the brotherhood.
And, of course, but you should at least have the option.
Right. I think it'd be an empty promise. I don't think a team member would leave. Like, you would never leave your fellow team, right? That would be a zero acceptance.
I'm actually wondering what the crowd is going to be like, because people you think would have to go home for different reasons, or they wanted to go home for this. I'm wondering what it will be like in the building today.
Yeah, I actually was texting yesterday with a friend of mine, a former colleague of Perloff and I's who works at Sports Illustrated, who was going to the game as a fan with his girlfriend who also works in the media, and they were both going as fans. She went to Notre Dame, and he said they're leaving. But that was mostly because of schedule stuff. Also, just a very unsettling feeling. Another crazy part of this, so my best friend lives in New Orleans, and her husband moved there about a year ago or so from California. And there was a house fire down the street. They live in the Marinet, and down the street from them was a house fire. It was an Airbnb, and they cleared the entire block because they think that maybe the terrorist was staying at that Airbnb.
No
and then
way.
Somehow the house caught on fire.
Oh my gosh.
I know. This is a very unsettling. Bogish, I'm not sure if they should be playing this game today. And I get it, because on the flip side, you don't want guys to be playing games too close together.
Yeah, but the next game is what? Was this be Thursday or Friday, their game? Either way.
Yeah, the 9th or 10th, right?
It's basically a week. I don't think we're not in the realm of playing Tuesday to Saturday, where you're really compromising people's physical well-being.
But I wonder if the players just don't want to wait around anymore. They just want to play. Maybe it's just easier to just go out there and play instead of have to sit and think about it.
I know. I guess who is this for? Is it for the players, or is it for the fans and the city?
I think it's for everybody. I think there are a lot of people who I think playing the game will help, maybe,
I sometimes wonder about that. I don't want to be so tunnel vision that we work in sports, so we think sports has these healing powers and we think sports has this ultra importance in society. And obviously we get checked on that quite a bit when real life happens. And so I can't tell.
Well, I think going back to work and normal, going to normal is huge.
But I don't think we're at the stage of normal yet, when police are still searching.
Right,
and
right.
There was that cooler that they detonated that was full of, looked like a IED that the guy had put together. There's still a lot unsettled here.
I think the only way the game helps, in air quotes, is to just get it over with.
Yeah, I think the players
get out of
people's plate, so they don't have to worry about dealing with this on top of the actual serious stuff, like the city. Right. Doesn't need to worry about the game anymore. It's just one less thing off the list.
I think if you're a player and you're sitting in your hotel room, you don't want to wait around anymore. You get all amped up for the game. I think you're just sitting and thinking about it. That's when your brain can go to some scary places.
Here's a part of me kind of wonders, I know the Sugar Bowl probably wouldn't want to do it, but do you just play it at a different site?
I thought about that yesterday.
Go down to Jerry World. It's not that far from,
just relocate everybody.
Just relocate everybody, yes. Someplace not that far from Louisiana. So people can travel relatively smoothly, but it doesn't. This thing feels very still up in the air in terms of what exactly happened with the terror attack.
Yeah, moving the game altogether seems too hard.
It's hard. I get it.
It's a lot of people.
But do you treat it
like a snowstorm?
Yeah.
Do you treat really
it like
bad,
weather?
And obviously, this is way more serious. But a weather situation or situation where the stadium's not safe.
Right, but usually those changes happen before the teams get, or at least the visiting team leaves.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, you're in Buffalo, it snows, let's pick up and go to Toronto.
Sure.
Like, that doesn't happen.
Absolutely.
But again, I mean, unprecedented circumstances. Not unprecedented, obviously. If you go back to 9/11, we've had terrorist attacks that have impacted sports, but this is just so tragic.
Some quick news from the NFL yesterday. The Eagles finally decide that Saquon Barkley will not play Sunday's regular season finale since the game means nothing to the team. Barkley did admit yesterday that breaking Eric Dickerson's single-season rushing record does mean something to him, but the team comes first. Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford will sit out for the Chiefs and Rams as well. KC's got nothing to play for Sunday, but LA is trying to get up to the 3 seed in the NFC. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thank you so much. Okay, you can weigh in on our poll question today at Maggie and Pearl on X. Was the Texas-Arizona State game an all-time great college football game? It went to double overtime. Texas escapes, and now they march on to play Ohio State. Meanwhile, Penn State will await the winner of Georgia-Notre Dame, which, as Bogus said, will be played later today at the Sugar Bowl. Coming up, we have so much to get to from college and the NFL. Man, is this the last game for a couple different people? And how are their legacies going to be treated if this is, and Sunday is indeed it?
Don't be a freaking weirdo.
Not just him. Got a lot to do, M&P.
What the f*** is Aaron Rodgers up to today?
Been a minute. This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. I felt like I was on a little bit of an Aaron Rodgers detox over the break.
That sounds like an Aaron Rodgers word, detoxing something.
Even though I watched him play against my Buffalo Bills, but I was able to turn that game off. Before Rodgers took himself out of the game, which I could not believe
that. That was the biggest faux outrage. People were mad that Aaron Rodgers took himself out of the game. He should have been out of that game 20 minutes before. Like, what? Who cares? Yes, let Tyrod Taylor play. Take it out of the game. Dude. This had Cam Ward taking himself out of the game. Get out of here.
No, Cam Ward's totally different. Aaron Rodgers took himself out of the game in the fourth quarter because they were getting so mauled by the Buffalo Bills. Dude, you came here, you brought your friends, you have your offensive coordinator, you got the keys to the kingdom, go down with the ship. Don't pass it off to Tyrod Taylor, who, by the way, scored two touchdowns in garbage time.
Let Tyrod Taylor get some action. Like, he's been sitting there all year, and obviously, like, should have probably been starting once the playoffs were out of contention anyway.
I'm sure 35-year-old Tyrod Taylor really wanted to get off that warm bench and have to go play garbage time in Buffalo. Oh,
desperately. The older quarterbacks want to get back on the field so bad to show they could still play.
By the way, Tyrod Taylor, Buffalo legend.
Okay. Anyway.
So Aaron Rodgers. Let's keep the main thing the main thing. Aaron Rodgers in an all-time just a brutal season. Just embarrassing, even by Jets standards. He has admitted that he's contemplating the fact that Sunday's game against Miami could be his last NFL game.
Have you thought at all, Aaron, about if this is your last game or could be your last game?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And what are your, like, when you reflect on that at all, what goes through your mind?
No, I mean, just a lot of gratitude for the last 20 years and the many countless lives I've encountered and amazing teammates and coaches I now call friends. Experiences I've had, memories, a lot of great memories, a lot of great people impacted my life.
Okay, more from Rodgers. Manny, let's hear cut 17. He says the Jets run has been some of the best years of his life.
I mean, gratitude, honestly. It's been the best 2 years of my life. And that's a perspective adjustment that happened, I think, at some point during the rehab process last year. But just the excitement, falling back in love with the game, getting to know these guys in here, getting to know the great men and women that work here. Been a lot of fun.
Bums.
I mean, it's just incredible that Rodgers obviously has this perspective, Pearl, of where he could be anywhere and he's going to see the silver lining now, right? Like, that's his whole attitude. It's like,
right,
he could be on Well, he is on one of the worst teams in the NFL. He could be on the worst team in the NFL, and he'd go, oh, gratitude for what you have. Meanwhile, everyone else around him is 100% miserable. Coach has gotten fired. GM has gotten fired. Everybody's future is completely up in the air, in part because he failed to play well this year.
But wait, weren't they the same place before he got there? Like, what's the difference between pre-Aaron Rodgers Jets and Aaron Rodgers Jets?
Just a little thing called hope that he sold to Jets fans by saying the Lombardi Trophy was looking lonely and how he was going to, you know, be the guy who knows about winning and he's the guy in the building. So that's what changed.
But anyway, nothing really changed with the Jets, as we probably should have seen. Like, the Jets were going to be the Jets before and after Rodgers. Like, that helmet is too powerful for even the best quarterback of all time to overcome.
To be honest, they're worse off. They're worse this year.
No, they're
year.
Exactly the same spot.
No, they had a better record with Zach Wilson last year. Their defense is in shambles. They actually had a good defense last year.
They had the number two pick when they got Zach Wilson. Like, they were the worst team in the NFL.
They were trying to tank that season.
Yeah, though. But they've been the worst team since the Rex Ryan Sanchez thing ended, and they're still the worst team. Like, nothing has changed. Aaron Rodgers couldn't change. Nothing has changed.
Yeah, I think you're underestimating, though, the fact that you and I both picked them to win the AFC East, did we not? Okay, so even we were along for the ride here, that we thought this was going to look a lot better. So, yeah, the expectations were just much different with Aaron Rodgers and Zach Wilson, and they failed to deliver on expectations. And maybe if you're sitting in a therapist's couch, they would say, well, that's your fault for having high expectations. But, you know, this is sports. And it's fun to dream when you get Aaron Rodgers, who talked a big game when he walked into the building about how he was going to change things, and they're worse.
Well, the reality
or
is
same.
They're same because it was just a reminder that I think all Jets fans should remember, like, your problem is ownership. Your problem, you know, you had the same problems before Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You're going to have the same problems. It's an important offseason. You're going to have the same problems. I don't think anything's going to change. It's kind of like Dallas with Jerry Jones. I just think the Johnsons intervene in ways that are not helpful, and I don't think it matters if Aaron Rodgers is there or not. You're going to have the same story with the next quarterback.
Yeah, you're right in some ways. And having the teenage sons maybe being involved in decision-making is not ideal. However, this also is Aaron Rodgers' fault. And here's why.
In what sense?
Because there were plenty of games, believe it or not, in this season where it was a one-score game with Aaron Rodgers with the ball with a chance to go win the game, and he couldn't deliver.
I don't think so.
Well, wait, but...
It's
why?
True.
I mean, you say that's his fault, but he just played badly. I mean,
yes.
Like, he wanted to play well.
But he couldn't. He wrote a check that playing couldn't cash.
He had one leg. I mean, you could see him. How many games, the first half of the season, how many times did he actually limp?
Okay.
I also
watched Peyton Manning with a Super Bowl with his neck fused into his back.
He had 9 touchdowns and 17 picks that year. He was awful. If that happened in New York, he'd be the worst quarterback of all time. Aaron Rodgers actually put together a pretty good statistical season somehow.
Okay, well, then what is it? Is he actually good statistical season, or can he not play because he's on one leg?
He just can't. He can't move. Like, Aaron Rodgers' game is a little movement dependent, and I think...
Then that's on him to understand his limitations and not be rolling out. And not
on him, dude tore his Achilles. Like, he didn't want to tear his Achilles. There's nothing mentally. I think he just physically was not up to the task this year, in my opinion. And he just, you think that he made, like, it was something about effort? I'm not sure where you got it.
No, not effort. I'm just saying that he wasn't as good. So the fact is, he's a professional athlete who gets paid to play well, and he didn't. And if you just want to say it's the Achilles, then fine. But I think it was even more than that.
I think he looks much better next year if he comes back. I mean, especially on another team. I think, because you could see as the season got along, like, he just moved differently in the pocket. By the end, he just looked more sturdy to me. I know he didn't play well against the Bills, but generally, like, you look at the second half of the season, you take those stats, I think a lot of teams would be like, wait, you want to come back? He'd be a good bridge quarterback. He just was not... I don't know. The first half of the season, at the end of the game, he looked like he'd been battered and bruised so badly every time. Remember, EJ, you know what I'm talking about. Like, didn't he look like a mess by the fourth quarter of every game early in the year?
I mean, yes, but this is a guy who also thought that he could come back from his Achilles tear last season. So this idea that he can't, he somehow should be given a pass because he got broken down. Well, this is someone who thought he could defy science. This is something he said over and over again. So I have very little sympathy for him. I have a lot of sympathy for him tearing his Achilles because I have a serious injury and I understand what that means. But I have very little sympathy in terms of, like, how he's played this season coming back, because he told us that he was going to light the world on fire and put the Jets in Super Bowl contention and wasn't even close.
Did he say this year? When did he say the Lombardi was lonely?
When he came, when he arrived. When
Before the Achilles.
Yeah.
He was talking, he didn't quite say that this year.
No, no, he was, hey, everybody, watch me. Look what I can do.
Watch him next year. I would love for him to go to, like, Seattle and just tear up the world, Brett Favre style.
855-212-4227. We're back. It's 2025. We're ready to go. Coming up next, our biggest takeaways from the college football playoff.